It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 37 degrees under sunny skies. Today is Thursday, March 27th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. The Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery had its third opening yesterday, concentrated in the waters just south of downtown. The opening lasted 1 hour and 10 minutes, starting at 2:30 p.m. and closing at 3:40 p.m. As of Wednesday evening, the Department of Fish and Game had not yet issued an estimate of how much was caught. Yesterday's action took place close enough to shore that Sitkins could stroll to the water's edge from downtown businesses to watch the fleet make their sets. People lined the seawalk and stood under the O'Connell Bridge with binoculars and cameras as spotter planes circled overhead. The location of Wednesday's fishery was different from the prior two openings, which both took place north of town in Stargavin and Catlian Bays. Fish and Game biologist Dave Gordon had set a goal of about 3,000 tons for this third opening. That was a smaller amount than the department had initially hoped for. Gordon had said earlier in the week that he hoped to catch the remaining tonnage left in this year's harvest limit in one opening. But as it became clear that the amount left would exceed 6,500 tons and exceed processing capacity, Gordon decided to aim for two openings. During his 11 a.m. update on Wednesday, Gordon also said that a large volume of herring had moved into waters near town that are out of bounds to the commercial fishery to protect subsistence use. Instead, the fishery targeted smaller schools of herring scattered throughout the waters south of town. Despite the smaller volumes, Gordon said Wednesday morning, "I feel compelled to provide this opportunity, given the quality of fish seen in test samples." ADF&G also revised their accounts from the previous two openings on Sunday and last Thursday. Fish and Game now estimates the fleet caught a total of about 9,800 tons of herring in those first two openings, out of a total harvest limit of over 16,000 tons. Gordon said that an aerial survey Wednesday morning found a few hundred yards of herring spawn on Middle Island. No other spawn was seen. In the sacro fishery, the eggs are taken intact from the females. It's critical to the success of the commercial harvest to land the fish prior to spawning. Once the spawn begins, the focus will switch to subsistence harvesting of roe on hemlock branches. Beginning in mid-March in Sitka, there is no escaping the excitement surrounding the commercial sacro herring fishery. Big seiners from around southeast raft up in the harbors, waiting for the large masses of herring to school up near shore. But the annual arrival of the herring marks the opening of another important and just as exciting season, subsistence. Tuesday morning, native leaders and tribal elders gathered to pour water on the herring rock in downtown Sitka to honor the herring and the renewal that their return symbolizes. KCAW's Robert Woolsey and Emily Foreman prepared this audio postcard.
Ashakenya, Ashakenya.
The herring rock rests now in front of the Sheetkaquan Nakahidi, but it used to be down in the Sitka Channel. By long tradition, herring were said to begin their spawn in this location.
Thank you for what we are about to celebrate. The herring rock, given to us by you, and what it signifies. The beginning of our harvest season.
The small crowd gathered to bless the rock acknowledged the efforts of Duck Didrikson, who died over the winter, to relocate the rock to a place of honor. But the rest of the brief ceremony was dedicated to reaffirming the history of Herring Rock and how it came to be.
We had two herring ladies went playing down by the rock, and they put their hair in the water. Shikawu, they put it in the water. And the herring came and they spawned on her hair. That's how they became the Herring Rock ladies.
The herring landed by commercial seiners haven't spawned yet. Their eggs are stripped in Asia and sold as a delicacy. In the subsistence harvest of herring eggs, fishermen sink hemlock branches into shallow water and wait for the fish to deposit thousands, millions, of eggs on the soft needles. The tradition has been around as long as the Tlingit.
Some of you can remember when it covered the whole of Sitka Sound, from Bjorka over to Cape Edgecombe. And it was all, inside waters was all full of herring. And it was beautiful. And all we had at the time was herring bait fishermen. And they would come in here and they would bring in the load, and we thought it was so amazing that they could bring in a load of herring.
There is tension between subsistence harvesters and the commercial fishery, as there usually is when a limited resource is involved. But this year, it looks like there will be plenty for all, and that is a blessing.
We are thankful that this tradition has been kept alive by our elders, passed on to us. Grunishchish, ho ho. Amen.
An audio postcard from KCAW's Robert Woolsey with help from Emily Foreman. You heard the voices of Andrew Roberts, John Duncan, and Nels Lawson. To see pictures from the Blessing of Herring Rock, visit our website, kcaw.org. And today marks the 50th anniversary of Alaska's Good Friday earthquake. The largest impact was felt at the epicenter, but 600 miles away in Sitka, it still made a mark. KCAW's Emily Foreman collected three short stories from people who were living in Sitka in 1964.
When the Alaska Pulp Corporation pulp mill was evacuated during the earthquake, Larry Calvin was out on the floating logs. They had forgotten about him. Had he not moved onto a raft, he would have been squashed between the logs as a tsunami wave rolled in.
As far as I know, we were the only ones in town that were really in danger, yes. I was a boom man out at the pulp mill. My job was taking swifters off of the logs. The swifters were cables that went back and forth across the logs, holding them together. We had just got back to the raft, and all of a sudden, the entire raft took a huge, big surge forward. The logs went at least 10 to 15, 20 feet forward. But all I know that it was was a wave of some sort hit. It was not a cresting wave. It was just two short forerunner waves that came up. Got on her knees holding on when all this went on. They had evacuated most of the pulp mill, but they forgot about us down in the rafts. According to the records, that one of the pulp mill executive up in his office did feel the earthquake, the actual time of the earthquake. But that word apparently never got out, never passed his mind. There may be a problem in the pulp mill itself.
While the pulp mill failed to warn Calvin, they managed to spread the word to the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Observatory, the group responsible for recording magnetic and seismic activity. Willis Osbachen was a geologist with the observatory in Sitka, and has this story of why the experts were late to the game.
Our main function there was to record and measure the magnetic field of the Earth. And one of our drawbacks was if there was a large earthquake close by, it often knocked the instruments out of operation. There was a galvanometer there, and if it swung too far, it would stick, and that's what happened during this quake. And at the same time, almost the phone rang, and someone from the pulp mill called, the man in charge. And apparently they were up on a upper elevation in the pulp mill, and they felt the earthquake. And so they said, they asked him, did we have a local earthquake? And he said, well, yeah, I think we did, yeah. He didn't feel it himself, but because somebody felt that, he felt it was local, then he saw it was something much larger than a local. It happened at low tide, almost zero tide. It came in about 6 feet, then it went out 8 or 9 feet, and then in a period of a half an hour, it came in like 16 feet. This whole thing, if it happened at high tide, there would have been some major flooding downtown here. There's no question about that, you know. We lucked out.
Kent and Marilyn Hansen lived on Japonski Island before the bridge. The evening of the earthquake, they decided to visit with friends in town. They took a skiff over to the Sitka side. Immediately after the earthquake, the current was too strong to go back. They spent the night separated from their kids.
We moved up here in 63, and in 64 was the earthquake, and we lived in a duplex on Mount Edgecombe, and we had five sons, and the children were 10, 9, 7, 5, and 3. When Kent first started working at Mount Edgecombe there at the school, he was invited by Henry Langfeld to go over there for music, or we were invited to do this. So we were doing this for a while. On a Friday night, we'd go over there. And it just so happened on this particular night, we made the decision to let our oldest boy be in charge of the five, of his four younger brothers.
There was no bridge. We were here BB, before the bridge.
On this particular night, instead of taking the shore boat across, we took a skiff, a 16-foot lap strake skiff.
And we were about halfway to the Langfeld beach where we were going to beach the boat and then walk up.
And Warren stood up in the bow and he said, "Did you feel that? Did you feel that?" And this was about 20 to 7 in the evening, and none of us could feel that. No, what are you talking about? About 9 o'clock, we got a call from the island, from our son, Steve, who is staying at the house with the kids. And he says, "Hey, Dad, there's been an earthquake. And we've been told to evacuate from the house and go up to the fourth floor of the public health service hospital." We were stuck there. We were stuck on Sitka side, and the shore boat was on the Mount Edgecombe side, and they weren't going to go again until the next morning.
And that was a story from Emily Foreman. You can listen to and read all four of our stories commemorating the Great Alaska Earthquake on our website, kcaw.org. And that will do it for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka, 37 degrees in downtown Sitka under sunny skies. Stay tuned for NPR's Morning Edition. I'll be back with you at 18 minutes after the hour with a live local interview. I'll be speaking with Amanda Roberts and Michael Jenkins about Healthy Living Southeast, an online lifestyle magazine from Search. So that interview is coming up at 8:18. I do hope you can join me for that. And don't forget to check out our website where you can also access the community calendar, kcaw.org. Good morning.